The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Wow, that is the first time I've heard that in almost a week. Almost a week. It is Thursday night here on the East Coast of the United States of America. You know what it is where you are. And I signed off on Friday of last week, 6 days ago. So I had the Jewish holidays and then I had a little personal matter to take care of last night suddenly. And thank God we're back and we'll be here today, tomorrow and Monday. And then it's Yom Kippur. So I'll have another 2 days off next week. But while we're here, we're going to make the most of it. I'll tell you that much. So joining us tonight is a man that I've come to know over the years, and he is a great human being, and I know that his dad looks down on him and is very proud of him. His name is Joe Connor, counterterrorist advocate and author, and his father, Frank Connor, was killed by FALN terrorists in New York City at Franz's Tavern, when they bombed Franz's Tavern in 1975. Joe's cousin, Steve Schlag, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, was one of the victims of 9/11. And he has written books. He's written columns. He's got a great website, wewinamerica.com. And he joins us right now. Joe, welcome aboard, sir. Great to talk to you.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me. Congratulations on your show.
Thank you. No, it's my pleasure. So what I want to talk about with you first before we get into, when I heard a report on Fox News that there's plea bargaining going on between the military and the five of the plotters of 9/11, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, they're all at Gitmo, yeah, and that they're talking about taking the death penalty off the table, yeah, and getting like forever medical care and all that, which we'll get to in a minute. I don't know why you'd have to even specify that unless you're going to get released one day. And in return, they will plead guilty. But no death penalty. Now, I thought these people were martyrs. I thought they would welcome death as martyrdom. But I guess they've chickened out, or maybe they were always chicken in the first place. But can this, and you've looked into it and you've written about it. You wrote a great piece called Pardon Me Again at townhall.com, which talks about the pardons that the Clinton granted to the FALN terrorists and what Obama has did to the bomb maker of the FALN terrorists. And now here we go again, you know, another deal in the making. So, but before we get to the background, let's jump ahead to the end almost. Is this something that is really going to happen?
It could. Yeah, I think as far as them pleading, I think that will happen. I went to Guantanamo Bay in 2016 as a family member and sat in the gallery while the pre-trial hearings were going on and watched Khalid Sheikh Mohammed turn around and stare at the kids whose fathers he murdered, waving and smiling. I mean, I saw pure evil in that man and the other four high-value detainees. They had already boasted. They had already written about their guilt. They were proud of it. And that was thrown out by Eric Holder and Obama. And
Eric Holder was Obama's attorney general.
General.
Just want to make it clear. Yeah.
Yep. And he was instrumental in the release of the terrorists who murdered my father. So these guys claimed responsibility. They were proud of what they did. And it was taken down. They had to rescind their confessions. And when they went to back to Gitmo, they put the back on trial again. They started, the trials would have been done. It would have been over. But the Obama administration wouldn't accept their plea, and they went to trial. They're still down in Gitmo, going through this crap. They haven't even gotten to a full trial yet, and it concerns me greatly that they will take the death penalty off the table, that they will offer these guys a plea to life in prison, which I think they should change that to death in prison to guarantee that they do die in prison. Because it concerns me greatly that if they are left in prison, eventually a politician, a president could give them clemency, the same way they did the FALN terrorists who murdered my father. Someone will say in the future that these guys didn't kill anyone. They weren't on the planes. If they were on the planes, they'd be dead. So therefore, they're not responsible for the murders. And that in at some point in our future where the 9/11 attacks and murders are kind of not as fresh and not as remembered as they are now, people will listen to that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they would be released. It's terrible. I don't know what to say anymore.
Yeah, no. I mean, you wrote, you know, as our family knows far too well, future presidents may release these unrepentant terrorists as the Clintons and Obama Biden handed clemency to the FALN terrorists responsible for my father, Frank Connor's murder. You know, look, we have, and I'm not putting it on a par, but we have, you know, people who commit violent crime that are on the streets the next day, that attack police officers and women and are on the streets the next day. And nobody really bats an eye. I mean, it is not far fetched, and you don't have to go too far down the road. It is not. We want to close Gitmo. First of all, I think they're forbidden. They cannot transfer these prisoners to the mainland here. I think you correct me if I'm wrong. You probably know exactly. I think they're forbidden from doing that. Is that correct?
I think these five, but you know, there's only about 60 left, and you know, they're closing down. They are slowly, or not even slowly, they are, you know, making Gitmo irrelevant. But right, I think you're right. I think the five high value detainees
are
going to spend the rest of their lives at Guantanamo Bay, and
not if President Kamala Harris or President Gavin Newsom says, once and for all, we just want to close Gitmo and blah, 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 blah. And these people cut a deal and, you know, they didn't kill anybody. And, you know, I see it very much happening. And I don't think America understands what's going on. I don't think anybody knows. Yeah. I don't think the mainstream media has reported on this much at all. And it's just a travesty.
No, it is. And, you know, when I was there, I talked to the prosecution about the eventuality that they could be moved to the U.S., moved to the mainland. And if they were moved to the mainland, what would be the likelihood that they could be released at some point? And it bothered the prosecution when I talked about that. And, you know, I equated it to the FALN, and they know the drill. They were very concerned about that possibility happening. And look, I personally have never been a fan of the death penalty. I'm not sure that the state generally has a right to take the life of its citizens. However, in this case, these guys are not citizens of the United States. And, they've confessed to these crimes, and the death penalty has to be, if it's not used in this case, it should never
then
be used
where?
In any case.
Right. 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 Yeah. Right. No, absolutely. We're talking to Joe Connor, a counterterror advocate and author who lost his dad to the FALN bombing at Franz's Tavern in New York City in 1975 and his cousin on 9/11. Check out wewinamerica.com. I want to shift gears because this country is so messed up right now. You know, we keep hearing the biggest threat to America is from white supremacists, okay? Domestic terrorists, white supremacists. Of course, they don't define what a white supremacist is. They leave it open. Biden kind of insinuated that you're a white supremacist, semi-fascist, enemy of democracy if you're a MAGA Republican. So that's about, you know, half the country right there. But we've seen what has happened. We've seen the latest where this gentleman who speaks outside abortion clinics and he got arrested. They came to the FBI, reportedly came to his house with 20 people, 25 people with guns and, you know, banged on the door. And from what his wife says is a misunderstanding. We've seen pro-life clinics blown up. Molotov cocktails and everything. No one's been arrested. And that's been months and months. The one in Buffalo was in June. We had one of the gentlemen from the management of that that group on this show. Nothing. The FBI, he said, has done nothing. No one's done anything. My question is, when you hear someone in your situation who not only lost his dad at such a young age and his cousin, but then saw the murderers, you know, quote unquote, the murderers, they didn't go to your father and pull the trigger on a bomb or anything. But the FALN terrorists who murdered your father, released by the Clintons, and all that. So someone in your position, when you hear about domestic terrorists is the biggest threat, and school boards, if you protested a school board, you know, you're a domestic terrorist. And if you disagree with Biden, you're a domestic terrorist. And the broad definition, I know what I think, and I've expressed it. What do you think? What goes through your mind?
It makes my blood boil, and really want to push back and fight back about this. Look, the FALN, they were never convicted of the Francis Tavern bombing. They were, however, convicted of seditious conspiracy, weapons possession, stolen cars, trying to escape from prison. I mean, the list goes on and on. They refused to defend themselves at their trial. They threatened to kill the judge at sentencing. And if you listen to the first thing they were convicted of, it's seditious conspiracy, which is the same charge that the Oath Keepers and others who were involved in the January 6th have been now on trial for. So when you think about this, the FALN blew up 130 bombs in the U.S. They murdered 6 people. They were put in prison for seditious conspiracy. They were sentenced, generally, there were 16 of them. They were probably an average of about 60 or 70 years in prison. They were let out by the Clintons after 17 years for political reasons. So we had terrorists convicted of seditious conspiracy who were involved in murder released while we are keeping Americans who have hurt nobody. Maybe they trespassed or rioted, whatever you want to call it, on January 6th. We're calling them terrorists and threats to our democracy. First of all, we're not a democracy. We're a representative republic, and there is a difference. And we keep these people in prison indefinitely with no trial. And the ones who are on trial could go away for 50 years. Meanwhile, we had terrorists in jail and released them for politics. So, do you know how that makes a person feel whose father was murdered by these people? And then the politicians have released them for political reasons. There is the injustice in this country of the application of law is so, it's so over the top right now. We are looking at a tyranny when you choose which laws you enforce. And we've seen it politically up and down the line. We see it with Trump. Regular things, a phone call that he had to Ukraine, his general speaking to the Russians before the inauguration on January 20th, over and over again, regular things that Trump doing what he being charged now in New York for his real estate deals, doing regular things that happen every day, all of a sudden being chosen to be charged, to make you criminal. So you're taking everyday occurrences.
If you're on one side.
Right. So everyday things that people have done forever, now they're choosing when and to whom they are charging. And that's tyranny. And we're seeing it up and down the line. The normal things that people do every day are fine for some people and they're illegal for other people. And I've never seen anything like this. And,
uncharted.
It is. I mean, I testified at Eric Holder's confirmation hearing. And I think it sort of started with the Justice Department around that time. And I said, anyone that would be involved in releasing unrepentant terrorists, because you have to remember the FALN never requested clemency, and they turned it down for 30 days. And Holder kind of pushed them to get out. One of them refused it, ultimately Oscar Lopez. But I said at the time, anybody that would release unrepentant terrorists or unleash them on the American people would do anything. And that's what we've seen. I mean, it didn't take Nostradamus to figure that out. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a complete unequal application of our laws in this country. And, you know, Roger Stone and other people, their houses being raided at gunpoint. Like you said, the guy in Philadelphia with the seven kids come to his house and pulling him out in front of his children for misdemeanors. This is not the country that, certainly not my father wouldn't recognize the country that we're part of now. And it's our obligation to do something about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should point out, you've referenced several times that those terrorists were released for political reasons by Clinton. By the way, against the advice of his Justice Department, Janet Reno.
That's true. The time, and the FBI and the Bureau
FBI, they all said don't do it. And Hillary Clinton was running for the Senate of New York, the U.S. Senate seat in New York. And they felt that, I guess, that most Senate of New York, the U.S. Senate seat in New York, and they felt that, I guess, that most Hispanics love a good terrorist if they're Hispanic. So they felt that by releasing these terrorists, that they would gain favor with the Hispanic community. I don't get that logic. I'd say 98% of or more of Hispanics would want to keep terrorists in jail, no matter what their ethnicity. So I never got that. But that was allegedly talked about as the reason that they were.
But that is what that was the reason. And the Clintons didn't say, well, they said these guys were nonviolent terrorists. You see, back to the point about those nonviolent terrorists. You know, they're not that bad. Well, if they weren't that bad, then no one would be in jail from January 6th. But in any event, but it goes back to the point about Gitmo, because these guys were they were terrorists. They were, you know, Clinton gave them clemency, handed them clemency, and let them out. And you know, I don't know. It's just so frustrating, Steve. Sometimes it just makes my head spin.
Well, I want to talk about, before we finish, I want to talk about a bill that Senator Marco Rubio and Bob Menendez introduced back, I think, a month ago or a little more. Bipartisan bill, which would require, and named after two people. One is your dad, Frank, but it's the Trooper Werner Forrester and Frank Connor Justice Act. And it would require immediate extradition or return of all fugitives who are receiving safe haven in Cuba in order to avoid prosecution. And I think that's so important. Tell the folks who the Trooper Werner Forrester is, and what, you know, why this bill would be necessary, and what is the status?
Sure. Werner Forrester was a New Jersey State Trooper who was murdered by Joanne Chesimard and other members of the Black Liberation Army in 1972. On the Jersey Turnpike, and they all went to jail for a long time. However, Asante Shakur, Joanne Chesimard, escaped from prison and ended up in Cuba in the 1980s and has been a guest of, well, first the Castro regime. And she remains there along with other terrorists, including William Morales. And Morales was the FALN bomb maker who most likely built the bomb used to murder my father at Francis Tavern. July 12, 1978, would have been my dad's 37th birthday, Morales blew himself up in his bomb factory in Queens. He lost 9 of his fingers, 1 of his eyes. He was arrested. He was sentenced to 89 years prison in New York, 10 years federal. He, like Chesimard, escaped from prison. Now, how a guy with one finger shimmy down rope, sheet rope from Bellevue Hospital is astonishing. But this is the story. He escaped and ended up in Mexico, where they got in a gunfight with federales and killed a couple of Mexican federales in the 80s. He was put in prison in Mexico and eventually, like Chesimard, extradited to Cuba, where he remains. So I've been fighting for his return, God, for an awfully long time. And you know, 30 years and more. And finally, we have a bill with my dad and Officer Forster's name on it, calling for Morales and Chesimard's return, along with Victor Garena, who is another FALN member who was an armored car robber, Charlie Hill, and other fugitives. There's an estimated 70 fugitives in Cuba. And, you know, they are terrorists that are being given safe harbor in Cuba. And finally, we have some justification for their return. Menendez and Rubio have been very good on the topic. And Menendez.
Where is the bill in the, where is the bill in the Senate? I mean,
it was introduced in August. Then, of course, they went on vacation, I guess, for a while. And now, actually, I'm just following up again on where it stands. Menendez's point was it can stand alone or it can be part of a larger bill. Mm-hmm. But he expects that it will get passed and go through by the end of the year. And then, of course, then it comes, well, how do you get these guys back? And there is some movement on that. There has been some extraditions from Cuba over the last few years. There was a murderer from Montclair, New Jersey, who was extradited back from Cuba only a couple of years ago. So there is the opportunity to do that. And from what I understand, Morales is very disliked by the Cuban regime. Chesimard is probably in more favor by them. So I think we have a much better chance to get him back.
Let's hope that it does get done by the end of the year, and we'll see where it leads. It certainly will help. Joe, wewinamerica.com. People could see all of your great work, and I advise them to go there very, very soon. It's easy to get to. And I thank you for your time. As always, great talking to you, and we'll speak again soon, sir.
Anytime, Steve. Take care of yourself. The Let's Go Mets.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Joe. All right. Take care. Joe Connor, ladies and gentlemen, counterterror advocate and author, and great, great man, doing great work, has been doing great work for a long, long time to honor his father and get justice for his father. And it's just amazing what goes on in this country sometimes, I'll tell you that. All right, we have a lot to get to, so much going on, and we will do that. When we come back, I'm Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.
From beach towels to tea towels and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
People say, this is crazy. Why is Joe Biden doing this? It makes no sense. Well, first of all, Joe Biden's doing nothing. Joe Biden's lucky if he can make it to the podium. He's not running the country. The people running him are the ones running the country. His chief of staff, Valerie Jarrett, all of Obama's people, the senior executive service that Obama put in every single executive department. Joe Biden isn't running the country. And the people that are running the country, these are hardcore Marxists. In the words of John Kerry when he was running for president in 2004, America needs to be taken down a peg. This is their ethos. This is what they believe. It's all part of cultural Marxism. People ask, what's cultural Marxism? Well, Marxism is an economic philosophy where the people that control the means of production control the workers, and all the workers have is their labor to trade for money. And Marx was a revolutionary that advocated a proletariat overthrow of the capitalist system, implementing socialism. Well, cultural Marxism uses the same principles, but it applies it to things like religion and society and education.
Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
In the ambulance, Michael says to me, Mom, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And so I yelled, help. I thought I was going to lose him. And in the hospital, within 10 minutes, he just crashed and was put on a ventilator. They put Michael in a medically induced coma, and they give Michael a 5% chance of survival. Nothing made sense at that point. It just seemed so crazy. I mean, he was fine, and then he wasn't.
Sepsis can cause reduced blood flow, leading to severe tissue damage to arms, legs, and other extremities.
There was no saving Michael's hands or feet. They needed to do 2 upper amputations and 2 below the knee amputations.
Sepsis causes an average of 38 amputations per day in the United States. To learn more about how to avoid the devastation caused by sepsis, go to sepsis.org.
This is the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, we are back. Tomorrow, as I'd like to do sometimes, usually on a Friday, no guest. We're going to have tons of sound bites for you, but meaningful sound bites, things that I don't think you've heard, or if you've heard about them, you may want to hear them again, even if you've heard them. One of them involves Joe Biden, and at a recent event, asking, where is the congresswoman? And the congresswoman was killed in a car crash about a month ago, a horrible car crash. He knew that. I mean, he had known that. He's due to meet with the family of the congresswoman tomorrow. The reporters at the press briefing after the fact just wanted an answer from Corinne Jean-Pierre. You know, what was the president thinking? How could he, did he apologize to the family? Did he call the family? How could he have said, where's the congresswoman? And he named her and when she's dead. And she's like, oh, that's not unusual. Instead of saying, look, you know, it was one of those moments. What could I say? And that would have been the end of it. Instead, she goes on and on and on. And to their credit, even liberal reporters at the press briefing went after her. She said, oh, no, you know, her name was top of mind. She kept repeating top of mind. And one reporter said, look, when I wake up in the morning, John Lennon is top of my mind. I don't go looking for him. I mean, my God. So she stuck. Oh, no. Oh, there's nothing wrong with what he did. No, no. You know, he had her on his mind. And so he had her on his mind. So he says, where is she when she's dead? So that's one thing. And a whole bunch of other things. You know, Donald Trump's a racist. Donald Trump's a racist. How many times have you heard that? Well, in 1999, Jesse Jackson gave Donald Trump an award for helping his Rainbow Push Coalition. I'll let you hear that. I got a lot of good stuff tomorrow, but I want you to hear something from Biden, which we may even replay tomorrow. We may not. There's so much stuff for tomorrow. But this is Joe Biden speaking last week. And he stops. And he says, he spots a woman in the crowd. Here's S-35.
Found out. And everybody found out there's not a lot of total climate deniers anymore after they've seen what happened this year. But guess what? We got a lot to do. You gotta say hi to me. We go back a long way. She was 12, I was 30. But anyway, this woman helped me get an awful lot done. Anyway,
she was 12, I was 30. Now, you might think he's kidding, and I have no idea. I doubt that he's kidding. Don't forget, his daughter allegedly wrote in her diary that Joe Biden used to take showers with her, his daughter, and it ruined her sexually for years. That's allegedly what her diary said. We've seen what he does to little girls at swearing-in ceremonies, wherever there's little girls assembled with, you know, swears in a senator. He goes over to the daughter and he sniffs their hair. He puts his arms on them, stands behind them, rubs their shoulders, bends down to smell them. I mean, there's a lot wrong with this guy, but I think maybe a lot more than we know. She was 12. She was 12. I was 30. But anyway, she helped me get a lot done. Wow. Wow. Could you imagine Donald Trump or any Republican stopping a speech to say that? We'll talk more about this and everything else surrounding it tomorrow. The Nord Stream pipeline. Okay. That transports Russian natural gas to Europe. or as Corinne Jean-Pierre called it, the Nordstrom pipeline. You know, the department store chain in the U.S., Nordstrom, high-end department store. She called it that. We played it for you. The Nordstrom pipeline. No, not quite. Anyway, of course, it was sabotaged, you know, blown up and apart, whatever you want to call it. And Tucker Carlson has questioned who done it. And he's insinuated that it might just be the United States. Because Joe Biden had said that if Putin had invaded, would invade Ukraine, we will stop. We will end that pipeline. And he was asked, how are you going to do it? And he said something to the effect of, oh, we have ways. So now, I don't know, the U.S., are they blaming Russia? Why would Russia blow that up or disable it? So I want you to hear what Carlson had to say. This is via Mediaite. This is last week, Tucker Carlson. This is cut S41.
So the question is who did it? And of course, the prime suspect is obvious. It would be the same man who caused domestic inflation here in the U.S. and stole the 2016 election from Hillary Clinton. That'd be Vladimir V. Putin. The Washington Post got right to it. Putin, they declared, is now weaponizing the Nord Stream pipelines. According to the Canadian ambassador to the UN, Vladimir Putin has decided to use, quote, pollution as an act of war. Progressive Twitter strongly endorsed this conclusion. Putin did it. And that makes sense until you thought about it for just a moment. Vladimir Putin may be evil. They tell us that he is evil. But is he stupid? Probably isn't stupid. And yet, and here's the strange part, if you are Vladimir Putin, you would have to be a suicidal moron to blow up your own energy pipelines. That's the one thing you would never do. Natural gas pipelines are the main source of your power and your wealth, and most critically, your leverage over other countries.
I mean, you know, Tucker's getting blasted for this. You know, he's a Russian propagandist. He's a Russian this, he's that. You listen to what he says and you decide if it makes sense. Here's S42.
Europe needs your energy now more than ever with winter approaching. If you can't deliver that energy, then countries like Germany have no need to pay attention to what you want. You're in the middle of a war, an all-hands-on-deck war, so you need all the leverage you can get. Under these circumstances, there is no chance you would blow up Nord Stream 1 or 2. Not now, obviously. In fact, it's so obvious that even our famously dim Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, seemed to acknowledge it. Sabotaging Nord Stream, he said today, is, quote, clearly in no one's interest. Right. But really only half right. It is true that blowing up Nord Stream does not help Vladimir Putin. He would not do that. Why would he? But that doesn't mean that other countries wouldn't consider doing it. They would consider it. And we know they have considered it because at least one of them has said so in public.
Okay. And who might that be, you ask? Glad you asked, because Tucker has the answer, S43.
In early February, less than 3 weeks before the war in Ukraine began, Joe Biden suggested on camera that he might take out these pipelines. Watch.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine. Again, there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will. I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
I promise you, we'll be able to do that. Very interesting. Very interesting. So how could you not question whether or not we had something to do with it? Whether we did it or you know, we had Germany do it or whatever. How could you? He said he was going to do it. Now, I know he said a lot of things. He said when the U.S. troops get to Ukraine, they're going to see this and they're going to see that. He said that to the troops in Poland. He said that American men and women are going to go physically, militarily defend Taiwan if China attacks Taiwan. He said the pandemic is over. He says a million things. He wants to know where the congresswoman who was killed in an accident is. Where is she? Is she here? I mean, look. And the White House keeps walking everything back. But they didn't walk back what he said about the pipeline, did they? Here's cut S44.
Notice how he phrased that. And he's the president. Doesn't phrase things by accident, particularly when he's reading off cards. He didn't say, I will pause the delivery of gas from Russia to Germany. He said, there won't be a Nord Stream 2. We'll put an end to it. We'll take it out. We'll blow it up. How will you do this? He was asked. I promise you, we will be able to do it. They thought this through. And yet those watching, very much including us, didn't take Biden seriously when he said it. This is the president who has declared climate change the most pressing emergency in the history of the world. This is the man who lectures you about using a wood stove or driving an SUV because of its emissions. This is the guy who spent billions trying to mitigate cow flatulence because methane. Would that guy really blow up a methane pipeline in the middle of the Baltic Sea? It was hard to imagine. That would be an unimaginably reckless act. That would be the kind of thing you would do if you wanted to start a nuclear war. It would be insane.
Yes. Agreed. That's a good word for a lot of things surrounding Joe Biden. Here is cut S-45.
And yet, in retrospect, it's obvious they were thinking about this because Joe Biden wasn't the only person to suggest it. Toria Nuland at the State Department said pretty much the very same thing. Nuland is a lifelong war cheerleader. She worked to bring about the Iraq invasion, never apologized, kept going. She helped engineer the coup that overthrew the Ukrainian government some years back. So capable, clearly she's capable of anything. But environmental terrorism, even for Toria Nuland, that seemed too much, too extreme. And yet here she is in January.
With regard to Nord Stream 2, we continue to have very strong and clear conversations with our German allies, and I want to be clear with you today. If Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward.
So, what the heck? What the heck? The U.S., you just heard it from her, you heard it from Biden, made it very, very clear. If Russia invades Ukraine, and they did, that's the end of Nord Stream 2. So where's the mystery? Why is it pro-Russia to bring this up and to consider that the U.S. did it, or the U.S. and their allies, or the U.S. allies in conjunction with the U.S., or some such scenario? You like that scenario instead of scenario? Very chic. And here is cut S-46.
One way or the other, we'll stop Nord Stream. Now, looking back, those words seem chilling 8 months later as natural gas pours into the Baltic Sea and into the atmosphere. So you have to ask, could the Biden administration really do something like this? We can't say for sure. We don't know for sure. We can tell you that close allies of the Biden White House believe they certainly did do it. Radek Sikorski is a Polish politician. He's chairman of the EU-USA delegation in the European Parliament. He's connected. He's also the husband of regime stenographer Ann Applebaum of the Atlantic magazine. Sikorski is so close to Joe Biden that he's got a picture of the two of them together in his Twitter profile. So when the pipelines blew up, Sikorski responded immediately. And here's what he wrote. Thank you, USA.
little giveaway, maybe, perhaps. And here's the final cut from Tucker on this S-47.
So once again, did the Biden administration really do this? It's hard to believe. Given that it's an atrocity, it's effectively an act of terrorism, we don't want to make that accusation. But we should tell you that, maybe not coincidentally, today a brand new pipeline was unveiled, a pipeline that carries non-Russian natural gas in roughly the same area as Nord Streams 1 and 2. This is called the Baltic Pipe. It was inaugurated in Poland. It will carry natural gas from Norway through Denmark to Poland and other countries nearby. And it's likely to do very well since now it has less competition. Making sense?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it makes perfect sense. I can't. I mean, don't you agree? Everything you said. I mean, you know, when the record is there and you could read the quotes and play the sound bites and present it to the people while you're making your argument as he does, and then you get blasted for it as some kind of, you know, Russian shill or Putin's pet or whatever they want to call him. It's crazy. Just crazy. Maybe Biden shouldn't have said it when he said it. Maybe what's her name there shouldn't have said it when she said it. I mean, come on. All right. Before we go to break, let's go to break and then we'll come back. Okay. I just have to pick which ones we're going to hear because there's so much good stuff. You know, when you're away for a few days and then you suddenly go back and you see what you missed and all that. There's just so much good stuff out there. And I want to bring it to you, Steve Malzberg. Follow me at Steve M Talk on Twitter and on Facebook, Steve M Talk. And, you know, follow me, like me, whatever. We're coming back, Steve Malzberg. This is TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Well, we've been talking a lot about the United States weather, and rightfully so. We pinpointed over a week ago what was going to happen with this storm, and of course, it is happening. And of course, the climate activists all wake up when something actually happens. They have no idea something is coming until it actually shows up. Last night, I was on the set of Sean Hannity's show, actually waiting to come on, and he put on a video of Amy Klobuchar, who's a U.S. senator, saying, well, this is why we passed the bill for climate change. You know, I got to tell you something. Either people like that don't know what actually is going on, or they do, and they're going to lie about it, okay? But it did get me aggravated because of the fact that it is complete fabrication that a storm like this blew up as it coming to the coast, especially since you had me outlining it 10 days before. How does someone that knows so little about CO2 know so much about the weather? That's the mystery question. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, we're back. Thank you. All right, Karine Jean-Pierre, the worst, most embarrassing White House press spokesperson ever, ever. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And then when she goes searching for it, if it's written down in her little book there, as she's turning the pages, she tries to stall. And then she tries to make it like she's talking, you know, off the top of her head while she's obviously reading. It's so embarrassing. And we're going to have more of her tomorrow. But I want to do this on abortion. Peter Ducey, White House correspondent for Fox News Channel, son of Steve Ducey, host of co-host of Fox and Friends. Anyway, asked her last week, what limitations does Joe Biden would he place on abortion? In other words, 13 weeks, 15 weeks, 16 weeks, 9 months. You know, what limitations would he place on abortion? It's a freaking fair, legitimate question that deserves a freaking fair, legitimate answer. But there's not an answer coming. It's too much for these people. Here it is. Here's cut S32.
Following up on your topper, does President Biden favor any limits on abortion?
We've been very, very clear here. Since you're talking about my topper, I was talking specifically about Senator Lindsey Graham.
And your position on his plan is clear. 15 weeks is unacceptable.
I was speaking directly to what Republicans are trying to do. They are calling for a national ban, which takes us backwards.
Okay. So obviously she didn't answer the question. She's been very clear. This is very clear. Here's what Republicans are trying to do. And he's going to say, I know about Lindsey Graham. I'm not asking you about Lindsey Graham. What is wrong with you? He doesn't say it like that. Here's S33.
Well, I'm not going to get into specifics here. I'm just going to lay out what they have said that they're going to do.
Why not get into specifics? The Republicans are saying we don't want abortion after 15 weeks. Why can't you say how many weeks a president things.
So as you know, Kevin McCarthy put out the GOP agenda.
I'm not asking about Kevin McCarthy. I'm asking about Joe Biden and his position on abortion. How many weeks?
Peter, I'm answering your question. What Republicans are trying to do is take us backwards.
I mean, really? I mean, is this not in back? Forget the fact she's not answering the question, which is sinful. I mean, really? Shouldn't the public demand this question be answered? But it's embarrassing the way she goes about it. It's embarrassing. I am answering your question. I'm telling you what the Republicans are going to do, but I'm not asking you what the I know what they want to do. What about Joe Biden? Well, the Republicans want to take us backwards. It's like, are you listening? Are you, hello? I know you're the first black lesbian, White House press secretary. Is that like a, you know, is that like a key to incompetency, that you don't have to be competent? You don't have to be in the same universe as the questioner. Gee whiz. Here's S34.
We should really listen to what Republicans are trying to tell us. And that's what we are speaking out against. And that's what we're going to talk about the national ban that Republicans are continuing to push when majority of Americans do not want that.
We are all covering the Republican plan. I answered your question.
She answered the question. This is what passes for an answer from the president's spokesperson. You might as well have the president there. He couldn't do worse. He might be looking for dead people there, but he couldn't do worse. He might spot a little girl in the crowd and say, come sit on my lap, but he couldn't do worse. What a clown show this White House is on every level. And you got Kamala at the DMZ, and she talks about our great bond with North Korea. She got her, I know it's very tough because there's North Korea and there's South Korea. I know it's confusing. What is wrong with these people? This is what's running our country? Holy mackerel. And that party is going to keep the Senate, gain seats in the Senate? If that happens, I just about give up. I mean, I can't. Wow. What's wrong with people in this country? Okay, let's continue. I'm going to change my plans. I was going to save this for tomorrow, but we have enough Karine Jean-Pierre for tomorrow, too. So let's get this done today. It's here. This will be 36, 37, 38, 39, and then 40. Okay. So the next day, after she wouldn't answer what limitations Joe Biden wants to put on abortion, how many weeks, although she said she answered the question, Peter Ducey is at it yet again. And here is cut 536.
Does President Biden think America's big cities are safe?
Can you say more?
Well, we know that thefts and robberies are up about 20% in the first half of this year, so I'm wondering if he thinks America's big cities are safe.
Are you talking about the New York Times story specifically? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, the murder rate is still 30% above its 2019 level. They're all from the Council on Criminal Justice. So we've seen some high-profile examples of this. The Washington Commanders running back was being mugged. He got shot. Karen Bass, member of Congress, had her house robbed. These are high-profile people. So should everyday Americans who are not in the public eye feel safe?
I like when he asks the question first. He says, could you say more? What don't you understand about, does Joe Biden think Americans should feel safe? What don't you understand about that? Can you say more? Okay, so I guess she was, I don't know, was she frantically looking in a book under crime, so feel safe. I don't know what it, anyway, so here's her response, cut S37.
I'll say this, that same story also stated that the crime is complicated and multifaceted. Look, this is a president who has secured historic funding to make sure that law enforcement has what it needs, especially, and he was able to do this in the face of opposition from Republicans. During a time where he inherited a rising crime rate from the previous administration, the president put forth the American Rescue Plan.
Oh, you know by now she's not going to answer the question. You know by now she can't answer the question. You know by now she's incapable of answering the question, just like she couldn't answer the abortion question, because the president doesn't have any limitations. I've never heard him say any limitations. They're all part of the radical left, the minority in the country that favors abortion on demand. Woman's body, can't tell her between her and her doctor, right to choose, leave her alone, woman's health care. That means abortion up to 9 months and right up until you're in the delivery room. So back to feeling safe. Back to feeling safe. This will be S-38.
In that very plan, there was more than $300 billion to go to local states and local cities to make sure that they were able to hire law enforcement, law officers. They were able to hire, firefighters. They were able to hire people that were critical to their needs as they were dealing with a pandemic. Republicans voted against that.
So I guess just the original question, does President Biden think America's big cities are safe?
It is not a yes or no question. It is very much a question of what has he done? That's how we see the question.
No, the question, what has he done, would be what has he done? The question, should Americans feel safe, is should Americans feel safe? Here's S-39.
What has he done to make sure that cities, and it doesn't matter if it's a big city or a small city, it doesn't matter if it's in a red state or a blue state, what matters is that we have the funding and we have done the work, put the policy forward to make sure that these cities, whether it's big or small, have what they need to protect their community. And that's what this president has done, again, without the help of Republicans.
Oh, without the help of Republicans. Those evil Republicans who love crime and destruction and hate the police. I'm telling you, this is as pathetic as it gets. And if this were a Republican administration, oh my God. But where's Republican leadership saying Biden will not answer this, will not answer that on crime? Should Americans feel safe? He won't answer. A limit on abortion? He won't answer. Shouldn't everybody know that that's the case? Well, the only way they're going to know that is if they listen to me and some others, or the Republicans tell them. All right. So you heard our guest, Joe Connor. He's a Mets fan. I'm rooting for the Mets in their series against the Atlanta Braves coming up this weekend. It's for the division title. Both teams are going to make the postseason, but the winner of the division gets a bye in the first round. It's advantageous. Could be advantageous. May not be, because you sit around for a week. Anyway, so the Braves won the World Series last year, the Atlanta Braves. So Joe Biden had them over at the White House. I went to the White House with the New York Mets in 1986 in the Rose Garden, saw Reagan honor the New York Mets as they stood behind him. So they gave Biden a jersey with his name on the back, number 46 for the 46th president, the name Braves across the front with a tomahawk, which is their symbol. They also do it at where the Braves play, the tomahawk chop. That plays over the PA system and everybody stands up and does a chop. Okay, well, that the left doesn't like that one bit. So here's Karine Jean-Pierre talking about that the day of the Braves visit to the White House. Here's cut S-40.
The president hosting the Atlanta Braves today. Wondering if you or the president has any thoughts about some of the controversial about the team name, the Braves name, the so-called tomahawk chop. Any thoughts on that?
So, look, we believe that it's important to have this conversation. And Native American and Indigenous voices, they should be at the center of this conversation. That is something that the president believes, that's something that this administration believes, and he has consistently emphasized that all people deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. You hear that often.
Okay, well, first of all, there's one, I talked about it in Give Me a Minute. I don't have his name in front of me, I should. I think it was a Cherokee leader in the vicinity of the Northeast or the Southeast. Anyway, the bottom line is, he says, I wish people would worry about more important things. Now, the Cleveland Indians caved and they changed their name. The Washington Redskins caved in the NFL and they changed their name. Let's hope that the Braves stick it out and don't give in. I believe most Native Americans couldn't care less. I've seen polls over the years, and that seems to be the indication. They're not worried about it. So enough with this. But notice she could answer that question. That question she knew right away. Oh, yes, the president feels this way.